as a machine that was building and maintaining energy in a dogfight. Whereas the Hornet, you can just take that energy and convert it into instant advantage. So it's the F-16 plays the long game, and the Hornet is just a machine where you can just cash in and just get instant results. But then your chips are spent. That's it. That's your one trick. And then if you don't convert that into an advantage, then you're done.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. Welcome to the latest episode of Extended, the ETOPS Aviation Podcast. We're ready for takeoff.
Hello there, and welcome to the latest episode of aerospace radio station Extended. Ever wondered how a Belgium Air Force F-16 display pilot ends up flying a Royal Canadian Air Force F-18? On Baltic Air Patrol? Nope, me neither. Let's find out more from Gareth.
Major Renotis, Grat, welcome to Extended. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Gareth, thanks.
How are you keeping?
Oh, I'm not bad. I'm here in Romania right now on a NATO mission for NATO air policing.
Excellent. So look, we're going to come on to that, but there is an elephant in the room to start with, because I know that a lot of our UK and European listeners will be thinking, hang on a minute, I recognise that guy, and he was the Belgian F-16 demo pilot for 3 years, and now he's a Canadian Hornet pilot. How does that happen for a start?
So what happens in Belgium is when you're what they call an auxiliary officer, aircrew, you get a set contract. So you have an initial term, and then after that, you either decide that you're going to go do something else, or you can do a set of exams and get ready for what they call a career officer track,
yeah,
where you then promote and go forward. So I reached that point after 15 years in the Belgian Air Force, and I had a decision to make. And I knew at the time that the Canadian Air Force was hiring skilled pilots because they have a bit of a pilot shortage right now. And so I applied, and they were interested. And about a year and a half later, through a lot of how would I say that, administrative,
a lot of paperwork.
Yeah, a lot of work, mainly having to do with the permanent residency and citizenship and immigration things.
Yeah.
Then I got to immigrate to Canada and start work there for the RCAF.
Fantastic. So, I mean, what's your time in Canada been like so far? It's a world away from Belgium, I should imagine, just in terms of the environment that you fly in on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, no, completely. So my first job there was actually headquarters in Winnipeg. So I did about 3 years there, working basically in a cubicle, so away from a cockpit. For me, it was a new experience because I'd never done staff work before.
Yeah.
But it was also a very foreign environment because Winnipeg is inland. It's very cold, and the winters are quite long. But the great thing with Winnipeg is that it's not remote at all. It's a big city,
yeah.
So life was easy to get into for the family and everything. The great thing as well with working in a headquarters is that our little fighter family there was pretty small. So we were surrounded by a lot of different communities, helicopter pilots, transport pilots, SAR pilots. And so it was a very tight-knit, small fighter community there. So that was great to just integrate in the Canadian forces and also understand how the RCAF functions compared to the Belgian Air Force. It's a different scope. It's a bigger military, it's a bigger air force, and it's a much, much bigger country.
So. Yeah, of course, much bigger. I'm not sure, you probably drop Belgium into Canada a couple of times over, couldn't you?
Yeah, it's like we can drop Belgium a couple of times in the cold lake airspace.
So let's just talk about, we've got to talk about the Hornet for a minute. I mean, you must consider yourself to be, I mean, you have to be pretty proud of what you've done, but you must consider yourself to be very lucky. You've flown two absolute icons of their generation. The F-16 and the F-18 will both go down as aviation icons, won't they?
No, sure, and it's quite interesting. So after my stint at headquarters, then I transferred in early 2019 to Cold Lake, where I did about 4 months of Hornet conversion with 410 squadron, and then I was posted to my current squadron at 409. And the really interesting thing is that both the F-16 and the F-18 took maneuverability but approached them differently. So the way that General Dynamics designed the F-16 was as a machine that was building and maintaining energy in a dogfight.
Yeah.
Whereas the Hornet, you can just take that energy and convert it into instant advantage. So it's the F-16 plays the long game, and the Hornet is just a machine where you can just cash in and just get instant results. But then your chips are spent. That's it. That's your one trick. And then if you don't convert that into an advantage, then you're done.
Okay.
So the F-16 is pretty much unlimited as far as G goes. It's just there to protect the pilots, a 9.5G aircraft. But the Hornet has unlimited alpha, so angle of attack, which means that you can actually just point your nose anywhere you want with the Hornet. It has a G limiter because it's a carrier-based airplane. Yeah. The wings will fold and things like that. So there are measures in place on the Hornet to try to protect that airframe. But it's quite impressive. Like the amount of angles that you can gain almost instantaneously is really cool.
I remember from back in the day when we saw Canadian Hornets that were based in Germany at the time coming over to the UK to display, it was that square loop that was always the thing, yeah. Wasn't it? And that, literally that pulling into that round that corner is very impressive.
Yeah, exactly. And it, like the other interesting aspect is like, so on the F-16, what we call the G onset, so the amount of G you will gain per second as you start pulling on the stick is high, but not ridiculous. It's not an extra 300 or something. Whereas the Hornet, the onset is actually really high. Because it has that square loop thing, right? You will just gain that angle, but you need to move that big airplane, right?
Yeah.
So you won't pull 9G on the Hornet. We're limited to 7.5.
Okay.
But you will pull a lot of G really quickly.
You're 3 years out of the cockpit, Grat. I've got to ask you, what was that like then, going back into a fast jet cockpit in terms of sort of muscle memory, the physicality of the whole thing? So it must have been a few nerves there about getting back in, maybe.
So, I chose to do everything the hard way. So, so I stayed away from a cockpit, and then when I restarted, it was at another base that I had only been to once with the Belgian Air Force for a maple flag.
Yeah.
Flying in a new Air Force on a new airframe. And so, like, all of my habits were actually wrong, because the way that the U.S. Navy designed the F-18, they took the F-16 and went like, oh, the Air Force did it that way, we're going to do the opposite.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. And then the other thing was the jet itself behaves quite differently, and it is mechanized very differently. Like the screens are not in the same places. Some of the switch actions are similar, but they have different results.
Okay.
Which means that you really have to relearn everything almost.
You could get yourself into a whole lot of trouble otherwise, I should imagine.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. So. So that was definitely an eye-opening experience. It was pretty hard, but honestly, it's also great learning, and it's a great experience just to get like both sides of that coin, and then getting into another Air Force with other doctrine and very sometimes different tactics are basically interoperable and based on the same standards, but it's just a different approach.
And look, I've got to ask you about Canada. Obviously, Belgium's a beautiful country. No one's going to deny that. But, yeah, Canada, you've got some spectacular environments to fly over. That must be a real privilege.
So yeah, so we're really lucky in Cold Lake. Like we have a giant range. So we have the Cold Lake range itself is about twice the size of Belgium, and that is just the range where you can actually like shoot things with targets and everything, where there's really like no one there. And then on top of that, you have an airspace that is about the size of the airspace you'd have between the north of France and the Netherlands. Okay. So that's just huge. And then from Cold Lake, you can just go all the way to the west coast of Canada, and you have all the area around Vancouver Island, all the fjords there. Like it's just beautiful scenery. So that is great. And we do a lot of our operations over the Arctic as well.
Yeah.
So that's another whole set of challenges. Just the pure survival aspect there is pretty impressive.
Yeah. What about those conditions during the winter, Greg? You mentioned the harsh conditions. You know, in Western Europe, we don't seem to get that quite so much as we used to. That's maybe a timely point with the climate conference going on and everything. But Canada still gets those proper winters. What's it like operating fast jets in that weather?
So interestingly, yeah. So Cold Lake will get to minus 40s. So it gets really cold. If you add the wind chill to it, we'll have like wind chill of like minus 50,
wow,
minus 55 degrees. So the first thing you have to learn is to plug your car in. Every car comes with a plug to heat the engine at night, because otherwise, if you don't do that, you won't start in the morning.
You're going nowhere. Right.
Yeah. So you're just staying home. So that's kind of like the funny aspect of it. But the as far as air operations, the main thing is the RCF has developed procedures to deal with all of those things.
Yeah.
So what's funny in a way is that when it gets that cold, there's actually no humidity. So the airplane actually doesn't ice over anymore. It's
okay.
Too cold. There's just no water. So that kind of helps in a way. It's yeah. better to be flying in minus 30 than like minus 10 with okay. 100% humidity. You'll have a lot more issues. The main things that will suffer in those conditions are hydraulics, because then the hydraulic fluid becomes some sort of like a slurry. It just doesn't go through anything. So you have to like preheat it by like moving controls and then things like that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that you need to keep an eye on as well is everything that has to do with batteries. Just like if you leave a pack of batteries outside when it's cold, or your phone, it's just going to lose charge. Just due to cold. But yeah, so that's pretty interesting. And then the other thing, if you compare a Hornet to a Viper, is just the like the FOD issue, right? The foreign object damage, where the Viper is just that giant vacuum yeah. cleaner in the front that will just swallow absolutely everything. The Hornet has high air intakes, and that also means that for us, we can actually operate with quite a bit of runway or taxiway contamination with snow okay. or ice without risking to actually ingest that into the air intakes.
And before we move on to talk about what you're doing in Romania, you mentioned about the survival aspect. I'm sure you've done winter survival training when you're in the Belgian Air Force, but presumably this is on a different level.
No, completely. Yeah. So there's specific equipment that we'll use in the RCAF for that. There are some courses that exist. I haven't done one, but for like that are tailored for winter survival, where it'll teach you how to build an igloo and that sort of stuff. And I've already, that's really interesting. It's run out of Winnipeg, then they'll go all the way up close to the Hudson Bay. And really teach you in February, like at the coldest time of the year, how to survive for about a week out wow. in the elements there. So we'll fly with like really, really big pants and coats and things. A little bit like the Michelin man walking to your jet. And you have to imagine that in a small cockpit.
It makes a cramped cockpit even more cramped.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, exactly. And then wow. so the Hornet has that beautiful like stick right in the middle, right, like a proper
yeah.
airplane.
Yeah.
But that does not help when you're when you're all bundled no. up and trying to fly.
Wow, great stuff. Well, look, you're a long way from home at the moment. Yeah, you know, you're in the Canadian Air Force. I'm in UK, but you're actually in Romania at the moment. What are you doing there? I know you're there for a few months. Explain to us what's going on.
Sure. So here as the deputy commander of the Air Task Force Romania, and that task force has been stood up starting in 2014, where after the illegal annexation of Crimea by Russia, the NATO partners came together and decided that they were going to put in place a series of what they called assurance measures for the eastern members of the alliance that were getting really worried about, you know, Russia's assertive moves, all the large-scale exercises that Russia was running, the repeated incursions in their airspaces, and so on and so forth. Sure. So initially, it started as a training and capacity-building mission from the Canadian Air Force into Romania. We're mostly doing training with the Romanian MiG-21s and some of their ground forces. And later on, starting in 2016, then we started our presence here in MK Air Base on the eastern shore of Romania, on the Black Sea shore, where we're actually covering the air policing role for NATO. That's what they call an enhanced air policing. So Romania is still policing their own airspace.
Yeah.
But what we're doing, we're basically here to give them a bit of a break because they've been extremely busy in the years since 2014.
Okay.
Their pilots fly all the time. There's a lot of intercepts happening over the Black Sea. And so while we're here for 3 months, we take some of that burden off their shoulders and we let them have a bit of a lower readiness state, and we'll take the high readiness state role.
Did you know that the first G suit for British pilots was essentially a chest-high pair of fisherman's waders which were filled with 2 gallons of water? The water automatically squeezed the pilot's legs as positive G was applied. Did you also know that the Islamic Republic of Iran Air Force's oldest McDonnell Douglas F-4D Phantom is set to clock up more than 70 years in service, having been delivered in 1968 and now subject to life extension programs taking it to 2040? If your answers to the above are yes, you're probably a regular reader of The Aviation Historian, the quarterly journal that explores the less well-trodden paths of flying history. If your answers are no, visit theaviationhistorian.com and see what you're missing.
Now, this is a huge undertaking, isn't it, to move your squadron, the 409th, all the way from Canada with all the support and people that you need. That's a big job, isn't it?
Yes, and if you remember, this year we had the Kabul evacuation happening at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
So that definitely made it even more challenging for us. So in a way, we're lucky in the RCF. We have our own fleet of C-17 transports, plus our own fleet of Airbus 310s. So normally what we would do, we'd use our own C-17s and Airbus 310s to move our equipment and our people into Romania. But with the Kabul effort, most of those resources are actually sent to Afghanistan or neighboring countries to help evacuate Kabul. And so we had to be a little bit creative. So we managed to charter a lot of our moves. We did get a few C-17 loads through Romania on the way to Afghanistan a lot of times. But once we got here, we actually had to start the mission as we were still setting up, just because it delayed all our start. So our task force is about 150 people. So it's quite a large contingent. And we occupy 2 Romanian provided hangars. On one side we have our operations, the other side is maintenance, and our jets, we use deployable tent shelters for those to protect them from the elements, so we don't actually park them into hangars.
Okay.
We're using the hangars as like office space here, but all of that needs to be set up, and it definitely was really challenging this year.
And what does the day-to-day look like, Grat? Are you flying regular scheduled air patrols? Are you on alert? Is it a combination of the two?
So it's a bit of a combination of the two. So we have 6 jets here. So on a regular day, we'll have some of those on alert and others flying that kind of capacity building mission with the Romanians. They now have MiG-21s and F-16 in Romania. So we've done quite a few flights with the F-16s. It was lucky that in their training program, their training schedule for the year, they were roughly aligned with us. So we actually got quite some good training. So we started with basic fighter maneuver, then air combat maneuvering, then moved on to tactical intercepts, so that the whole gamut of air to air with them. There's also a lot of JTAC, so close air support controllers here. On the American side, the Romanian side, we also brought our own Canadian ones.
Okay.
So we ran a campaign at one of the shooting ranges here We brought our own training munitions, and then we ran about 2 weeks of close air support training.
Okay.
So that was pretty good. The main thing is, so we'll do a mix of what we call hot and cold postures. The hot posture will focus on the air policing, but then on cold weeks, we'll have all our jets dedicated to force generation training. And so then we don't hold alert, we'll just fly a standard schedule.
Okay. I must ask you, Grat, when you were in Europe, you'll have done a lot of F-16 versus F-16.
Mm-hmm.
As a former F-16 pilot, what's it like flying a dissimilar type against the F-16?
So it was kind of funny because we started with BFM, which is like really just 1v1
yeah.
aircraft v aircraft thing. And before we started, I gave a bit of a pre-brief to my guys, going like,
"You gave it all away, basically, didn't you?"
You know. and after the first day of flying with them, they called us for our debrief, and they were like, "It's like you've done this before." And they're like, "Well, it's not exactly that they've done this before. It's somebody told them." So that was kind of funny. The great thing though, for me personally, fighting an F-16 was to then, because I knew the strengths and weaknesses of an F-16, I was able to then take my new jet and go like, well, if he does this, I'm going to do that. And yeah. I'm going to try to not get into those situations. So that was pretty cool.
Excellent. Have you flown against the MiGs?
Yeah, we've flown a bit against the MiG-21.
I mean, that's another absolute icon, isn't it? You know, the Russian fighter of the sort of 60s, 70s, the Cold War.
Yeah, exactly. So what's quite impressive with the MiG-21 still now, it's very fast. It's a very, very fast airplane.
Yeah.
It's a giant engine with almost no wings. the other thing is it's very small. It's actually really hard to see.
Yeah.
We don't really do air combat, like BFM type stuff with them, just because it's not made for that. But we'll fly like interceptor type profiles, and they're actually quite good at it still. So Romania has updated their MiG-21s with mostly Israeli avionics and weapons. And they're quite capable and quite impressively for the quick reaction and alert role, the sort of QRA thing that we do here for the air policing, they're really well suited for it. At the time in the Cold War, they were point defense interceptors, and yeah. that's exactly what they're doing here. So they'll use that speed, rate of climb, and their updated avionics to still get the job done with a machine that's 50-ish years old.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. I think I'm pretty sure you'll be happy me to ask this. I know from the RCAF's social media, you've had some intercepts, haven't you? So you've already had some interesting flying going on during this mission.
No, exactly. So like I said, it's very active here. There are a lot of incursions. A lot of times the Russian fighters and bombers that will enter Romanian airspace will do so without a flight plan and without contacting Romanian air traffic control. So it's actually quite dangerous.
Yeah.
So the reason why we intercept them is, first of all, because they're violating NATO airspace. But
yeah.
the second reason is also a safety reason. We just want to know where they are and what they're doing so that we can then tell the Romanian air traffic control, okay, that's that jet, they're flying that altitude, and monitor what they're doing. Otherwise, it's pretty unpredictable.
Yeah.
The we were fortunate enough, the moment we got here, we really started seeing an increase in activity. And I was in one of the first formations that intercepted that Sukhoi 24 Fencer, where we posted those pictures on social media later on. And as you can imagine, that's also part of it. It's the way we hold Russia accountable for their actions. Like we will not. The pictures are not just for social media.
No, of course.
There's obviously an intelligence component to it. But also just an accountability piece where we will fly next to that airplane, take a picture of it. You can see the tail number of the airplane. And we'll go like, yeah, we intercepted you. We know it's you. This is that tail number. We know that plane comes from that base. There's no questions asked about it.
And Grat, just from a personal point of view, as a long-term fighter pilot, it's got to be exciting, right? I mean, it's kind of what it's all about.
No, sure. And like again, making a parallel, I've done this mission set in Lithuania and in Poland before, and the situation there is exactly the same. But the interesting thing is, for someone coming from the NORAD side of the house now, from Canada, our intercept there are a lot longer.
Yeah,
we'll go intercept bombers that fly over a pole. Flights are usually 5 to 8 hours long.
Okay.
Here we're talking minutes.
Yeah.
So we'll take off about 3 or 4 minutes after takeoff. We'll be on the wing with a Russian aircraft, and then we'll have to leave that aircraft probably 5 to 10 minutes after that.
Oh, that's pretty. That's pretty intense, isn't it?
Yeah, because they're flying in another country then, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
So it's a lot shorter timeline, so it's very intense. The pace of the alert and the intercept is really quick, and it's really about being prepared. Plus, this flank of NATO is really, really close to Crimea and bases like in the region of Sochi, so the Eastern Black Sea. All of those platforms that Russia has deployed on the other side of the Black Sea are extremely advanced. So it's also an opportunity for us to go and intercept aircraft that otherwise we probably would never see, and are really like state of the art of the Russian armed forces.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Grant, as deputy commander, you must be very proud of all of those 150 people that are out there. And I know you've had something else to be proud of this year with the squadron, haven't you? Because it's been celebrating an 80th anniversary, which I know is always a big deal. And the unit's got so much history, hasn't it?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, yeah, the shout out is really to the 150 people that make the mission happen here. So we have world-class maintainers. We have really good pilots too, but then there's all kinds of people who make the mission happen and that usually are working in the shadows. And I'm thinking, as the deputy commander, I deal mostly with the support functions for this mission. Like, we have a lot of like finance clerks, for example, that make sure that everyone gets paid in time.
Yeah, yeah. And,
you know, we have public relations people. We have our chaplain, and all of those people actually work together to make the mission happen. So that's been great, and I have to say it's great to deploy with the RCAF with really high caliber people and very kind people. A lot of them have never left Canada, never really come to Europe, let alone Eastern Europe. And like, we've had campaigns with orphanages, with some at-risk youth. Wow. That we've brought over to the base, and so on. So that's been really great. On the 80th anniversary, the sad thing is, due to the COVID pandemic and the fact that we're really busy deploying here, we haven't really had time to take time to actually celebrate it properly. Now, the squadron was created in November, so we still have
time.
A little bit of time. I would have wished we had a bigger celebration with all kinds of pomp and circumstance, but
yeah.
What I think will happen is, once everyone is back home, we'll probably wrap that into our Christmas and New Year celebrations and really celebrate that 80th anniversary. It's quite interesting because my old squadron, 350 in Belgium, is also celebrating their 80th anniversary.
They were
created the same year,
yeah,
in the same month,
yeah.
Pretty
wow.
Close to each other, to be honest. But whereas 350 flew the Spitfire, 409 was a night fighter squadron, so they flew the Bullfighter and then later on the Mosquito. So it's interesting how history sometimes kind of intersects.
Well, it's brilliant heritage, and you guys are continuing it on to this day with what you're doing out there, and we should all be very grateful that you are. Grant, I'm going to let you go because I've taken up quite a lot of your time, but I do have one last question. Now, you didn't know this was coming, so I apologize, but yeah, F-18 demo pilot, is that a possibility?
Yeah, that's kind of funny. So interestingly enough, while I was at the staff, I was employed as the safety pilot for two consecutive demo pilots.
So you did get it, start to get in there quite quickly then.
So I did get my air show fixed. The demo pilot would be great, but the main problem is kind of my career caught up with me, and I think I'm on a track now where I'm not going to have much time.
Okay.
I will stay in touch with the airshow world. Like, the great thing that I got to do when I was a safety pilot, I actually came over to Fairford for Riyadh with the Hornet demo at the time. So that was a great experience, and it was quite funny to be back in the UK, back at Riyadh, with another uniform. But I don't think that I will end up as the Hornet demo pilot. But you never know.
Yeah, there can't be that many people that have demoed both, I don't think. So
no, that would have been really cool.
Yeah.
I don't actually think anyone has done it.
No, I'd be struggling to think. But listen, Greg, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really, really appreciate your time. And what the listeners won't know at this stage is that you guys have hosted one of my colleagues from Global Aviation Resource, who's been out to Romania as well, which is a fantastic opportunity. And we're very proud of the work you're doing. And well done for making a big change of country, change of aircraft. And it sounds like it's going brilliantly. So thanks again.
Well, thanks a lot, Gareth. It's always a pleasure.
G'day. I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's only regular aviation podcast series. The Wings Over New Zealand show covers all sorts of aviation topics, with a New Zealand flavour but an international appeal. From interviews with veterans and aviation personalities, to topics like military aviation, warbirds, air shows, historians, authors, museums, aviation events, and much, much more. We have an extensive archive of episodes that you can go back to, and there are new episodes coming out all the time. Search for the Wings Over New Zealand show. Oh, and by the way, we love Extended. It's a great show. Well done, guys.
Thanks for that interview, Renault. Whoever knew the MiG-21 was just such a versatile aircraft, and how one manages to move from Belgium to Canada to Romania. Carrying out the air policing mission in Romania under Operation Reassurance, this is Canada's contribution to NATO's assurance and deterrence measures. There's a fabulous supporting article to accompany this episode on the Global Aviation Resource website with Chris Wood from the GAR team. We'll put a link in the show notes. And that's it with the arrival of the music. It's goodbye from Gareth and myself. And remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
The cockpit's very cramped, you've got leg restraints on, you're sat on a seat that's got explosives in it.
Just taking me on the trip of a lifetime in a F-18F Super Hornet.
Knowing how to recognise a store, being taught like visually and the basic PPL, it wouldn't bother me.
Thanks for listening to Extended. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need. Extended!
We'd like to thank White Hearts and Peter Dixon for their contributions to Extended. We'd also like to thank the Extended family of supporters, including Mick Oakey at the Aviation Historian. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, so please do ask before using anything you hear. The programme is produced with a Creative Commons licence.
This is XTP Media.